Our next presenter is Richard Kimball. He is a nurse with a board certification in public health and a master's degree in public health and community health. He's recently finished his doctorate in health policy at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, and he's now at the School of Medicine and Nursing at Johns Hopkins University. The title of this paper is right there, Caregiver Burden in Degenerative Disease and Associated with Decreased Quality of Life for Caregivers and Patients.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I would have loved to get 2,000 for my term population size, and I also did not differentiate the difference between caregiver burden and caregiver stress, and I'll show you that in just a second. I approach it from an outpatient perspective, my caregiving experience and my study here, no relationships to disclose. I'm looking really, and I was interested in a small population of people with ALS. These are abbreviations that I will use throughout. PALS are people with ALS, caregivers, quality of life, and caregiver burden. And particularly the differences with as disability increases, the differences in quality of life, and the differences between working versus retired individuals, so greater than and equal to 65 or so. Informal caregiving, the main difference between formal and informal is informal are unpaid, primarily relatives, spouses, etc. And then formal caregiving. Otherwise, it's pretty much the same as what we've heard other speakers discuss. Caregiver burden is very similar. I use Zaret and Zaret's definition and quality of life by Smith et al. ALS, just so those of you who do not know, it is also called Lou Gehrig's disease, terminal neuromuscular disease that is insidious, kills within 3 to 5 years, generally with respiratory insufficiency. Eventually, you lose all capacity to ambulate, speak, swallow, and eventually to breathe. Death, again, 3 to 5 years. Mean onset is working age, 56. Prevalence is rare, 4 to 6 per 100,000, about 25,000 people at any one time. Incidence is similar to MS, but people die quickly, so the prevalence is less. Financial aspects of caregiving, we've heard some of this. The Arno and Levin is a great article. If you haven't read it, that really delineates a lot of good talk about formal and informal caregiving. There's not a whole lot of resources available out there. Medicaid's HEBS program is one that is possible for providing formal and informal caregiving. PALS are disabled, again, working and retirement age. What we know about that is that they can access income like Social Security, SSDI, or SSI if they haven't paid into the system long enough for under 65, and then they can access Medicare immediately. ALS is one of those diseases where they don't have to wait 2 years with a disability. This often means, again, Social Security is not replacement income, of course, so that means that there's a decrease in family income and often a loss of private health insurance. Increasing PALS disability from literature, we know that increasing caregiver burden for especially informal caregivers increases dramatically as the disease progresses because of increasing disability and they become more physically dependent. And the literature shows that the increased caregiver burden is affiliated or associated with decreased quality of life in both caregivers and PALS. And there's higher morbidity and mortality among PALS as well in terms of institutionalization, but also in terms of caregivers. The literature says that caregivers are negatively affected by caregiver burden, increasing psychological and physical morbidity as caregiver burden increases. This is both in the general literature and also in ALS. And increasing stresses lead to higher morbidity and mortality as caregiver burden increases with PALS disability. Higher healthcare costs and societal costs, therefore, because of absent and burned out caregivers, the common calls for PALS admission to acute care and chronic care facilities, where as our outpatient clinic is, again, it's outpatient, people are at home, we try to avoid people being institutionalized as much as possible. And that means higher mortality costs and greater length of stay for PALS who are hospitalized as well. Methodology for the study I did was questionnaire-based in our ALS clinic, ambulatory clinic again. Main factors that affected PALS and caregivers that I used for collecting the variables were from the literature review that I had done. The sample is cross-sectional, one point in time, and it's conducted over an 11-month period. Convenient sample of volunteers, non-random, at one ALS clinic at, again, an academic institution, major tertiary care facility. I used the McGill single item scale for the quality of life scores, the caregiver burden inventory by NOVAC, MacArthur SES and social standing ladders, the ALS-specific quality of life scale. It included a variety of subscales like sleep, spirituality, several components that are specific to ALS. And then physical and mental health, we used the ALS functional rating scale and the SF-12 for both PALS and caregivers. And clinical measures like the breathing capacity, which is the forced vital capacity you see, demographics, and other factors. I considered any factor that was less than or equal to 0.1 because this is really an exploratory study. I use the, in terms of modeling, the precede-proceed model by Green and Creator. The actual variables I just placed in this, we had predisposing, enabling, and reinforcing factors and other exogenous variables, along with behavioral and lifestyle, environmental indicators, led to health and vital indicators, which lead to overall caregiver or PAL's quality of life. Again, just a little snippet from the precede-proceed model that just talks about what exactly health is. It's a very complex item. Again, the ALS clinic where I collected data, it's a current clinical practice. At any one time, there's about 200 PALs with their caregivers. We get a variable amount at any particular time because people die, new people are diagnosed. It's a nurse-led clinic by a nurse practitioner as the director. I'm part of this multidisciplinary team that has occupational and physical therapy, nutrition, speech, durable medical equipment, orthotists, respiratory therapists, medical and other ancillary services as needed. And there's a lot of case management that goes on along with support groups and educational seminars. And there are clinical trials, which is some attraction to why patients come to the clinic. In terms of demographics between caregivers and their PALs, the N here was 104 PALs, and 99 of those had primary caregivers who participated in the study. The mean age is about what you'd expect for ALS patients. Again, 56 was the mean onset. We get folks who are both older and younger than, about two-thirds that are younger than 65, one-third that's about older than 65 on both sides. Primarily, the caregivers were female, 73 out of that 99, and predominantly white, not very diverse again, with an overall response rate of 79. And the males tend to be, ALS tends to be a disease about 1.5 times more. We get about two times more males than in this area in Maryland and the D.C. suburbs, probably because of the service-related. And we tend to get more males, about two-thirds male. Most are married, very highly educated, over half have a college education, very few have less than a high school education. Insurance tended to be private for caregivers, as you might expect. For people with ALS, it tended to be private insurance like Medicare, about 50-50 split there. And the job status, there were more caregivers in the workforce than there were people with ALS. Continuing with descriptives, we see that the physical function of caregivers of PALs that were under 65, they had fewer physical issues themselves as caregivers. Their mean caregiver burden score, and this was on a scale from basically 0 to 96, the mean was about 16.1. And that really is a reflection that the people that are still coming to the ALS clinic are minimally disabled on the ALS-FRS scale. Okay, these are people that are still coming back and forth. We often, and early as possible, because it is a functional disease and they're not able to get, you know, to clinic eventually, we make referrals to outside agencies for home care, and we also refer to hospice when it's appropriate. And the intensity of clinic use tends to be about once a quarter, about 3 to 4 visits a year. Caregivers, the mean days of caregiving was about 2 years, 761 days. And we saw the mean hours was about 20 hours for informal. The use of formal caregivers was about 6.5 hours a week. And we had higher SES reported among those greater than 64. In PALS physical disability, we saw that there was more caregiver burden and hours of formal and informal caregiving used, as you might expect, of course. And overall quality of life scores were 7.1, slightly higher in the over 65 and over group. That's positive, I think, for aging and public health. PALS, we had better than over 65 reported better mental health, and they used more formal caregiving, and they were closer to the ALS clinic, tended to be tighter circle. And greater physical disability meant poorer mental health and poor sleeping patterns and self-esteem and respiratory status. Overall quality of life was 6.8, not too far from what the caregivers were. And then the significant differences in terms of statistics were just by t-test or chi-squared, whatever was appropriate, were that in age, the older versus the younger, the greater than 65 had, of course, more Medicare for both groups, I believe, and then 80% of the less than 65 had private insurance. The job status, there were more in the workforce, of course, less than 65. And we found that in terms of race, that there were more African Americans or blacks caring for mildly to severely disabled, so the more severely disabled PALs tended to be African American. Not really sure why that is. And then for the PALs, race tended to be greater in the over 65 for white, and a less diverse population. Insurance, again, was Medicare. Job status was tended to be more people that were retired in the greater than 64, as might be expected, and more disabled in the less than 65. The insurance tended to be, for the more minimally disabled, they tend to be in the workforce more, so they tended to have more private insurance versus public insurance. Regression model included 17 variables for the caregiver. These are the different variables: hours of formal and informal caregiving, caregiver burden score, the intensity of the ALS clinic, mental status, demographic factors, caregiver relationship to the PALS, the physical functioning of the caregiver, distance to the clinic, years of caregiving, and SES. The adjusted R-squared was 35, so about 35% of the variance is explained in this model. The significant variables are listed here: caregiver burden, caregiver mental status, years caregiving were marginally, again, I was considering anything below 0.1, and SES scores were also marginal, and then the primary insurance being Medicare was actually significant. So the interpretation was basically that, you know, the greater the caregiver burden, you're getting a decrease in quality of life. The better the mental status, you're going to get an increase in quality of life. There was definitely a factor about experience. So as caregivers were able to provide more caregiving over the years, they actually increased their quality of life or reported better quality of life. So there might be some experience that goes along with this. Also SES, people that had more resources, whether that be income or otherwise, they were able to report a better quality of life. Primary insurance being Medicare was also seen as a positive thing, maybe a good thing for the future in terms of looking at the differences in the groups. In terms of the PALS, the regression model I ran was about 21 variables. These are the variables listed, very similar to the caregiver. Again, hours of formal and informal caregiving, directly from the literature. Caregiver burden scores, PALS physical disability, and PALS SES, spirituality scores, sleep scores, fatigue, demographics, intensity of ALS clinic use, mental status, area of onset, and distance to ALS clinic. The results, the significant factors here were informal caregiving, number of hours per week was marginally significant, formal caregiving hours was, along with the physical functioning or disability score, and then spirituality and mental status. So basically we see that the number of hours of informal caregiving, as they go up, we see a decrease in the quality of life for ALS patients and their caregivers. For formal caregiving, the more you use formal caregiving, they were reporting or predicting a better quality of life. As, of course, is expected from the literature as well, as disability increases, so does quality of life scores actually go down as well. And spirituality, for every, as spirituality increases, or as people report better spirituality, they report better quality of life, and mental status is similar. So, just like I've talked about, I tried to put it in some factor. So if we took from the mean and went one standard deviation in either direction, this kind of just shows a little bit about what percentage we could increase the quality of life. For instance, the increase in caregiver burden, if we increased it by one standard deviation, we would see a decline in the quality of life scores of about 14%. So this just gives some magnitude of comparison. I was kind of going back and forth on how to show this best. If anybody has any ideas, I'd be more than welcome to listen. And the biggest factor here was the mental status, where it predicts a higher quality of life score. Also with people with ALS, we see that the informal caregiving and the formal caregiving also predicts either increased or decreased quality of life here at a factor of about 5%. And the disability also does the same with spirituality and mental status. So in terms of limitation to the study, the sampling, of course, it's a non-random convenience sample at a tertiary facility. It was only one center. This could be selection bias, of course. There could be other unobservable factors in the sample. It was only performed at one clinic. It's a highly educated sample with a small sample size. There were some missing data, which is always a concern. There were a lot of variables for this multiple regression with a very small population. Really, the implications to this, I hope, are that we're able to see that there are few resources for informal caregiving. Maybe we need to provide more, whether that be training, and so that experience factor can be kind of let in, whether we can provide them disease-specific or generally about how to care or what factors will affect this. We might also see in the future, and I hope that we'll be able to, in clinic, be able to screen for factors that improve quality of life, and maybe eventually there can be an intervention to help improve these things. And of course, for future research, I always hope that be more funding, of course, and increased sample size to enhance the ability to detect the significant results, additional variables potentially. I think it would be great if there were more qualitative data to really enhance this quantitative data, which is very important, but it's also good to get the picture of the qualitative experience. And we hope to get several centers involved in future research and explore more age interactions to see if there really is a difference between the PAL caregiver dyads that are older versus younger. And there is hope for caregivers. ALS is one of two diseases that's fast-tracked by Medicare. There's no two-year wait period once disability is established, as I mentioned. The VA, it's now considered a service-related disease, ALS, so anybody who's served in the armed forces is able to access a lot of different things like equipment, medication, cheap health care. Hopefully this can free some money up for either training informal caregivers or money to supply for formal caregiving, like other countries often provide. And appropriate in time referrals to things like Medicare and the hospice benefit can help provide some support for caregivers, both informal and formal. Thanks to the ALS clinic team and the dissertation committee and all, of course, the caregivers and the PALs who participated in the study. Any questions?